Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
I wanted to feel accepted, and I wanted so badly to just be a part. That was really the first time that I can remember needing that acceptance and wanting that acceptance way back when I was 6 years old. And that kind of theme ran through my entire school experience.
Everybody has a story, and everyone is a chapter. A piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope,
and power.
And power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I
are a part of it.
We are not.
You're not the hero.
This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. From her earliest years, Tabitha Eichelberger can remember longing to feel accepted by her peers. Her dream was to be the prom queen, because that would surely mean she was popular. She would have friends, people who loved her for who she was. But instead, her teen years were marked with loneliness and isolation. Venturing into girl world meant experiencing some of the deepest hurts of her life. But it also meant learning about finding acceptance and identity in Jesus. If you have a daughter or granddaughter who's struggling through the teen years, Tabitha's story will encourage you. This is Chapter 36 of Epic, Tabitha Eichelberger's story.
The first experience I had with acceptance and the need to feel accepted would be in first grade. I remember the cool thing to do in first grade in the 90s was to trade school supplies. There was a girl in my class that had the coolest erasers, and I remember them so distinctly. The one that I was in love with was a hot green neon skull with crossbones eraser. It was the coolest thing, and I wanted it so bad. And I would try to trade my pencils or my folders, whatever school supplies I had, with her so I could get that eraser. And she was like, no, you know. So one day, my mom came home, and she had bought me the two pair erasers, and one was a heart with half purple, half pink, and it sat on a stand. And then the other one was this swirl eraser, and it was purple, white, and pink. And they were so cool. I mean, they blew this skull head out of the water. And I just remember thinking, oh my goodness, this girl is going to want these bad. So the next day I go to school and I said, hey, look what I got, you know, and I said, I might be willing to trade with you. And this girl was like all about it. Yeah, I'll give you the skull head. I'll give you this. I'll give you whatever you want. And so I remember saying to her, though, the thing that I wanted more than even that eraser was I wanted to play with them at recess. And I said, you give me the skull head eraser and let me play with you at recess, and then I'll trade you this for it. And I honestly can't remember if that trade was made or not, but I can remember I never played with her at recess. And that is what I wanted more than anything. I wanted to feel accepted, and I wanted so badly to just be a part. That was really the first time that I can remember that feeling inside me of needing that acceptance and wanting that acceptance way back when I was 6 years old. And that kind of theme ran through my entire school experience. Through third grade through eighth grade, I went to a Christian cottage school at our church. So there was probably maybe 12 kids in the entire school. So it was very family oriented, very kind of laid back. And so I really didn't have very much interaction with people of my own age. But then my parents decided that in eighth grade, I needed to go back to public school to kind of prep me for high school. And I really didn't know very many people. I think there were like two or three girls that I kind of known from doing swim team and stuff with. And I talked to them a little bit in the summer, and they said, oh, you know, just come hang out with us and it'll be fine and stuff. So I remember my mom and me praying the night before just that God would give me peace and that I'd be able to find a friend. And the next day she drove up to the blacktop, and then you see all these kids just kind of circling in different groups and stuff, and it was horrifying. And I walked up, and we had prayed on the way to school again and closed the door, and I just looked for anybody I could see that I knew that was a familiar face. And I saw one of these girls. And so I went right up to Kate, and I was like, hey, Kate, you know, how you doing? And she's like, oh, hi. And I guess my expectations were too high, but I was hoping, you know, she'd kind of introduce me to people and just kind of slide right in there. And that wasn't the case at all. I mean, it was very much, oh, hi, you know, and then basically turn your back and go back into your group because, she was in junior high too, and she didn't want to feel left out. And she was very afraid that if she befriended me, some new girl who no one knew anything about, that might kind of hurt her chances of being included in the group. So she kind of went back and did her thing. And I was kind of puzzled, like, what's going on here? I think I was just very naive at that point. But as the days went on and the weeks and months went on, I kind of started to realize how things worked in girl world. One of the things that really stuck out to me is you go to a lunch table and you have an entire kind of royal family. And that's what I describe in the book. And, The first person is your queen. You always have a queen, and she is in the center. She is the boss, and everybody follows what she does. And then after that, you have about two or three princesses, and they are the queen's right-hand people. And so you got the queen. The next is the princesses, who are kind of sitting right next to her. And then after that, you're going to have the royal court. And that's usually like four or five other girls who are kind of circling the princesses and queens, and they're what makes the system work because they are who is promoting the queen. And then after that, you have kind of the lower court, and that's where I was in the group. These were the people that maybe had a friend or two in the royal court, but they weren't really a part of the inner circle. And so I would say that I was probably one of those. And then at the lunch table, you sat at the last like two or three spots. So you weren't anywhere near the queen, but you were still at the table. So that's where I was. And then after the lower court, then you have the commoners and the peasants, everybody else in school. Uh-huh. And they're just kind of, they know they're never going to be in the court. They really don't even have a desire. It's not really on their mind. And they're just kind of in their own world. So that's how I kind of describe the atmosphere of junior high and high school. And a lot of times it was really interesting. I almost felt like God showed me maybe more of an insight at my age than maybe I was mature enough for. I don't know. But it was almost like it was in a bubble. Like I was looking at a snow globe and I was seeing all this stuff happen right around me, but I wasn't really in it. And I found it very interesting that if the queen was sick for a day or wasn't at school for a day or something like that, they would not skip a beat. One of those princesses would be up there and they would be in her spot and they would be the new queen for that day. And so if the queen was gone for much longer, all of a sudden she would come back and she wasn't the queen anymore. She was down on the totem pole quite a bit. And sometimes the old queen would go back into maybe she would become part of the royal family. Or if the rumor or whatever happened was bad enough, she would be totally out. I mean, she would be a peasant. And sometimes the queen would try to work her way back in. And then other times she would just kind of fall behind and just become a commoner or peasant. So anyways, that's kind of what I experienced in eighth grade. I kind of got a feel for what the atmosphere was like. And so then I went into high school. And like I said, I was kind of in the lower court. I had maybe two or three friends that I would hang out with at school, but nobody really that I really connected with. So then I went to high school and I became a cheerleader. I tried out for cheerleading, and there's no way in the world I should have made the cheerleading squad. I cannot even do a cartwheel. But somehow, by the grace of God, I made the cheerleading squad. I started doing that, and then I started dating a guy, his name's Mark. And he was a king. He was very popular. He was charismatic. He was funny. Everybody liked him. And he was definitely one of the top guys in the class. But we started dating, and I've said this forever, that he was one of my saving graces. He didn't care what group I was in. He didn't care, you know, if I was popular or not. By dating him and by becoming a cheerleader, I kind of started to hang out with more of the royal court a little bit more, just because that was kind of who he was with. And so I just kind of went along with that. You know, we would go out with him on the weekends, and we would go to their houses. And for about 6 months, I was like, wow, this is awesome. Like, I finally feel like I have some real friends, and they're nice, and we're having fun together, and this is great. And so for like 6 months, school was great. I had never in my life actually wanted to go to school, and I was waking up wanting to go to school. And then things started to change. I've always been kind of an introvert, so I've liked to have my alone time, and I've liked to kind of, I love my family. My family's amazing, so we would hang out on weekends and stuff like that. I didn't feel like I always had to be with friends, but I found out that if you want to maintain your spot in the court or the royal family, it's hard to keep up. You have to be at everything they are at, and you have to be involved with everything that they are talking about. And if you miss out, it doesn't take long before you're knocked way back down. And so, you know, I wasn't, I maybe I wasn't willing to give up time with my family and time for myself to fit in as much as I needed to. And it was just a lot of hard work. And so I slowly kind of noticed feeling a little bit left out. And there were people, I mean, right behind me that were ready to bump their way up. And that started to happen. And, you know, at first I didn't really even notice it very much, but it didn't take long for me to realize I was out of that circle before I even knew what had happened. And then I started noticing the social isolation part. And that was probably the hardest thing I have experienced in school. And what I mean by that is, you know, you walk up to a lunch table with all your friends and you go to sit down and everybody else gets up and walks away.
What?
Yeah.
What was the reason for it? Because you weren't doing things the way they do things?
You know, I think that was part of it. And what I also think is you know, there may have been a rumor spread about me that I still to this day don't know that maybe may have turned some people against me, or maybe there was something about me that they just decided they didn't like one day. I mean, that happened very often with lots of people. So if they decide they don't like you, then you're just automatically out. And I honestly don't understand what that reason was to this day. Anyway, you know, I'd sit down and everybody else would get up and leave, and then you'd be stuck eating lunch by yourself. And not only were you eating lunch by yourself, but you felt humiliated because everybody around you sees you sitting by yourself. Or another thing was, is you get there in the morning and literally the court actually forms a circle. I mean, there you got the queen, you got the princesses, you got the royal court, and then you got the stragglers or the lower court at the edges. You'd walk in there and try to talk, and they'd be laughing and joking, and then you walk in and it's silent. Nobody talks anymore. And, you know, girls have a way, and, you know, myself probably, I'm probably guilty of this as well at times, of making someone feel super tiny without saying a word. Mm-hmm. And that can cut you the deepest.
Loneliness, isolation continue to be a big part of Tabitha's high school years. While she struggled to find a real friend, God put other relationships in her life that kept her afloat. People who reminded Tabitha she was loved and accepted by Him. That's coming up in part two of Epic. Welcome back to Epic. We're so grateful you're listening. If you can't stick around for the rest of the show, you can always listen to the podcast on our website. We believe everybody has a chapter in God's great big story. We would love to hear yours. Tell us about it at myfaithradio.com. Today, we're hearing Tabitha Eichelberger's story. She longed for acceptance from her peers, but she often experienced social isolation. She was struggling through high school, just trying to make it through each day. And though she had few friends, God was putting other people in her life who could remind her of her worth and that she was loved. Here is part two of her story.
You know, girls have a way, and, you know, myself probably, I'm probably guilty of this as well at times, of making someone feel super tiny without saying a word. Mm-hmm. And that can cut you the deepest. And that's what I experienced quite a bit of in high school.
Was that your freshman year?
This would be my sophomore, junior, senior year.
Okay.
Sophomore and junior were the roughest, though. The interesting thing was, though, is even though I was not in really necessarily the super royal family, I was still considered by all the commoners and peasants of being popular and being one of the royals, if not the queen, because of probably who I was dating and just kind of the circle that I found myself because of him hanging around with. And, you know, I was a cheerleader. I was very involved in school. And so everybody else thought, oh, man, she has this great high school experience. This is wonderful. But that was not the case. And I remember that some of the hardest days were they would announce the homecoming court each year and the prom court each year, like a week before the the actual day. And so we'd be sitting in class and they'd announce it. And when I was in high school, I got nominated four different times, and they'd say my name, and I think, oh my goodness, this is awesome. You know, people must like me.
Somebody
out there likes me because they're voting me into these things. Anyways, I would come out of that class refreshed thinking, oh my gosh, people like me. And I walked into the hall and it was awful. You would see girls giving you the meanest looks you've ever seen, whispering about you or not whispering about you and just saying like, there's no way this is legit. This is rigged. There's no way you should be here. Like, there's no way you should have got on the court. I mean, horrible, mean stuff. And they know how to knock you down so quickly. And a lot of my lunches those days were spent in the study hall room, and I remember hurry up and getting whatever snack or whatever I could find and running into the study hall room and closing the door so nobody would see me. And so I didn't have to be around that because I knew that whole day was going to be awful with people looking or saying things or just and maybe it was my perspective. Maybe I looked into it more than I should have because I was oversensitive already about that. But those days were awful. My saving grace was my mom. And she's my biggest supporter, and she still is. And she would take me out of school some days at lunch just to get a break. And we'd drive around. We'd go get something to eat. We'd talk about stuff that didn't involve school. And she kind of got my mind off of it. And then we would pray, and she would pray that God would get me through the rest of the day. I'm sorry. God would get me through the rest of the day and that I would know that he was there with me. And so after that...
It sounds like a really painful experience, and it goes on for years.
Yeah. But thankfully, I did have a wonderful mom who was a Christian, and she instilled her faith in me and what she would always tell me. We'd pray every morning before school, and she would ask me specifically. She'd say, okay, what time do I need to pray the most today? And I'd say, like, lunch, because I don't know who I'm going to sit with. And I would know that during that time, I had somebody praying for me, and that made a huge, huge difference to me. And she also told me, you know, no matter how alone you feel every day, God is with you the whole time. You're never going to be alone. And that made a huge difference.
Did you think about that when you were going through the hardest parts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is one of the things that really got me through. And, you know, I've grown up in the church. I've always believed, and there was never like a big aha moment that God is real. I've grown up with that, and I knew that. But I think my teenage experience really... helped me gain more of a relationship with God because there was nobody else. And so as horrible as this sounds, it was like, God's the only one I have, you know?
Yeah.
So I would lean on him a lot during that time. And some of the other things that I really wanted to stress is the importance of parents. Every day when I would come home from practice or school, whatever it was, my mom was always there, and she'd be at the kitchen table and she'd be waiting to hear about my day. And she was there without her cell phone next to her. She wasn't texting somebody. She wasn't looking on Facebook. She didn't have the TV blaring in the background. She was there to hear about me, and she was totally present, mind and body. And I could share with her whatever I wanted. And there were times that I really didn't want to share, and I just wanted to go upstairs and be by myself. And she respected that. But there was no time that I ever felt that if I needed my mom, that she wouldn't be there. She listened without distraction. And she also took the time to invest in me and who I was at a young age. And what I mean by that is she found out what my likes were, what my dislikes were, what I struggled with, my personality, what I feared. You know, I was an introvert, and she knew that. So she would push me to get out of my comfort zone at times. But because she invested in me when I was young, when I came to be a teenager and things got, communication sometimes gets a little bit harder, she knew, she had that basis of, she knew who I was. And so she was able to encourage me and support me better at that time. But maybe I didn't speak as much as I used to, or we didn't have the same communication we used to have, but she knew enough mm-hmm. to know how to support me. And
I'm sure she was praying a lot. I mean, I'm sure God was giving her that wisdom as a result of her praying for you. Did you see that? I mean, you knew she was a prayer.
Yeah. And actually in this book, I have her contribute a lot. And she talks about what she prayed about and how hard it was every day for her to have to take me to school. Cause she said, I felt like I was throwing her into a pack of wolves every single day, but there was, you know, I couldn't not do that. My mom also made it a priority to, there was a few people in our church that she got me in touch with. And one of them that sticks out in particular, his name was Mr. H is what I call him. And he was my prayer partner. And my mom got me in touch with him. I think I was in like fifth grade. So I was really young. And I would go over to his house and I would pray with him maybe once a week. And then in high school when things got busy, it was once a month or, you know, whatever it was. But it was somebody else that I could go to when I felt like I couldn't go to my mom, that my mom knew was a Christian man, and he would give me good advice and thought. And he's like my adopted grandpa. Even today, actually, just a couple weeks ago, he lives in Colorado now. We get on the phone and just pray with each other still. So it's such a cool thing that we have maintained that relationship for all those years. But she gave me him. And I remember there was one time we were in his garden. He's like the typical grandpa too. Like he's in his rocking chair, rocking back and forth just with that smile. And I remember it so vividly. He would listen to me and ask me about my struggles. And I felt totally open and honest with him because I just I trusted him, and he's a wonderful man. But I remember one day it was really rough. I had had a really rough week, and I went to him, and he asked me something. He said, you know, Tab, have you ever thought about hurting yourself, or, you know, have you ever took in your mind to that place? And I said, yeah, I have. And he said, you know, it broke his heart, and I've never seen this big burly man ever cry in my whole life. And that day I saw him cry, and I could tell, and it was hard to see that. But at the same time, I thought, man, I'm loved and I'm cared for, and people are praying for me, you know, and I can get through this. And then he ended up giving me this sandstone rock. I always remember it. And he gave it to me. He said, I want you to have this. He's like, when I was growing up, anytime I had a hard time or rough day, for some reason I would look at this rock and I would just think, we can get through this. It'll be okay. And he's like, it really just kind of gave me a piece. He's like, I want you to have it. And every time you're having a bad day or a bad week, I want you to look at this and realize that there's somebody out there praying for you, and you're not alone in this, and God is there with you. And I took that with me, and it's such a small gesture, but it made such a huge difference. And that just meant the world to me. And so I just encourage people to, parents, find a mentor for your child that if they don't feel comfortable coming to you for certain things, that they can go to that you know will give them good, godly Christian advice, because that was one of the biggest things that helped me. So yeah, thankfully I graduated and I got through that time and married the love of my life. And you know, but even as adults, we can still face some of those same feelings that we felt back in high school. And I think sometimes God allows us to kind of relive some of those experiences so that we will know with our children, we'll be able to remember what those feelings were like. And so then we'll be better able to help our children get through them because we remember. Sometimes I feel like as time passes, you kind of forget and you know, you think, oh, she's just being dramatic or, you know, just whatever. It's just teenage stuff. But it's not. The stuff that happens in high school and the stuff that you grow up with can affect you for years to come. Mm-hmm. And so just by being able to encourage, and you are, as a parent, especially the same-sex parent, is the most influential person in a child's life. And I totally believe that. And so we need to be the advocate for our children. And we need to be the ones who are going to listen to them and to be there for them. Because if we're not, nobody else is going to be, you know? And so thankfully, I had a wonderful mom and a wonderful family who got me through this. And I say on the back of my book, one night I was in my room crying and my mom said, Tab, there's a reason God's putting you through this. And now looking back all these years later, I think I finally know the reason. And it was hopefully to help other teenage girls and parents be able to communicate with each other and help support and encourage each other. So maybe not everybody will have to go through, you know, maybe what I went through, or at least if they go through it, maybe some tools to help them get through it.
Was there ever finally like a stage in your life where you realized getting acceptance from other people wasn't a big deal anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when that really happened for you?
Yep. And I think it was a constant struggle. And to be honest, I still struggle with that sometimes, of the wanting to be accepted. But I remember specifically in eighth grade, I talk about the story in my book. I won't get into it, but trying to go in and talk to the crowd and just being totally shut out and looked at like I was just a piece of trash and like, why do you think you could even talk to me? And something clicked in my head there. And I thought, why am I doing this? Why am I working so hard to try to feel accepted when I'm never going to be accepted by these people? And why would I want to feel accepted by people who make me feel this bad? And something went off in my head, and I'm sure it was the Holy Spirit that told me, it's not worth it. Be yourself, be who you are, be who I made you to be. And I kind of took that day, and I did kind of just start going off by myself. I did things. I would hang out with some people, but like, I'm not going to be somebody that I'm not, because in the end, you have to answer to two people. You have to answer to yourself, and you have to answer to the Lord. And I didn't want to be that person that said, I compromised my beliefs, or I compromised my values, truths, and morals because I wanted to fit in so much. It wasn't worth it. And so that day in eighth grade, I remember it very vividly. I kind of made that decision to stop trying and be yourself. And that was a big moment for me. And there were times that I would fall back into the same pattern, and, you know, because everybody wants to feel accepted. It's natural. God made us to be relational people. And so I think it's natural to a point, but you can't let that define who you are. You have to define who you are and try to stick with who God made you to be.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting, because making the decision that you weren't going to try to be somebody else so you could be accepted, one of the consequences was not being accepted.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so that pain that you endured those 4 years of high school was partly a consequence of that.
Yeah.
But a healthy choice nonetheless.
Right. And especially now looking back on it, I think I am so glad I did not give in a lot of times to the pressure. And it was hard. And I talk about it again in my book. And there were consequences to it. I was sitting by myself most of the time at lunch. You know, I was hiding in the study hall room. It was not fun. But looking back now, I'm like, I didn't give up the person I was. I didn't compromise that. And looking back now, I am so glad I didn't do that. Mm-hmm. Because that would be something I would have regretted probably forever.
When Tabitha looks back on the awful years of high school, time has given her some perspective. She says she wouldn't wish that experience on anyone, but now, as an adult, she's grateful for what she learned. And her hope is that sharing her story will help someone else. She's written about it in a book called Diary of a Lonely Prom Queen, Reflections on Parenting Teenage Girls from a Teenage Survivor. If you've got a daughter or granddaughter, it's a window into their world that will help you remember what it's like to be a teen, and it gives you some practical tools to help. You can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and learn more about Tabitha at myfaithradio.com. Big thanks to the crew that makes Epic possible, Jason Rakow and Ted Ross for production. Thanks to Stefan Johnson for our theme song, and I'm your host, Meredith Foster. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.